Other horn, no.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I'm going to go all literary on you and break out the Herman Melville reference. In college football, there's something I like to call the white whale, the elusive, the rumored, the transcendent play of a head case quarterback. This beast was previously witnessed in Columbia, South Carolina in 2010 by the name of Stephen Garcia. It surfaced again Saturday night in the person of Zach Mettenberger. Fortunately for us, the Tigers couldn't stick the landing. What do you make of this sighting and near miss?
Well, man, it's just kind of like Gary Danielson said at the end of the ball game. Every championship team on their run is going to stumble, and they're going to have that game that they should have lost. And in 2009, our game was Tennessee. Yep. And this year was the game. And hopefully we've gotten out of our system and we can hopefully get back to those bigger margin of victories.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That Tennessee game where we blocked a couple of kicks was certainly a game that, you know, by all intents and purposes, you know, probably should have lost that game. And this game was pretty close. I'm just going to ask the hard question, just very raw. Saturday night, was LSU the better team?
I don't think LSU was the better team. I think they were just able to execute their game plan better on that given night. Maybe it was just the pent-up frustration of getting their tail kicked in the national championship game and just all the talk in the preseason and having to go through offseason workouts and then starting the season ranked higher than we were, and now we've, you know, jumped over them. You know, and also, too, it's just the whole Saban thing. And this rivalry has just taken on a whole new life of its own. Sure. And for all Georgia and Florida and Tennessee fans that want to talk about, you know, they have to play each other every year. I'm sorry. We still have to play the other best team in the SEC. With all due respect to Georgia and Florida and Tennessee, the top two teams in this conference for several years have been Alabama and LSU, and the championship runs through one of those two cities.
Absolutely. And you know, Georgia and you know, Tennessee and South Carolina and Florida, you know, they were an unknown quantity going into the season. And for the most part, they were all, maybe with the exception of Tennessee, better than anyone expected. Alabama and LSU, Alabama were both considered, you know, in the top three going in, and you know, to think that they're both centered, you know, centered in one division of one conference is pretty impressive. But I asked the question, you know, if they were the better team, and if they were the better team that night anyways, and I kind of ask it in the spirit of last year's game where we lost the regular season game to them in overtime, but we put up drive charts, and you go back and look at the game, and you could see where we pretty well dominated that game. I'm not going to say that they dominated this game, but some of the metrics do kind of bear it out. I mean, we lost their turnover battle. They ran 88 offensive plays to our 53. They held the ball for 39 minutes. They were pretty dominant in phases of the game.
Yeah, you know, the commentators want to talk about for 58 minutes, LSU dominated this game. And I don't agree. I don't agree with that assessment. I think it, you know, Coach Saban always talks about every play has a life of its own and move on to the next play. And our formula has always been running the ball 30, 40 times and letting AJ get back there and attempt 20, 25 passes. And we got away from that a little bit. I think, you know, and I guess let me just take a step back and say that I think the difference in this game, as Saban said in his press conference, was third down conversions. And it's simple to say, and yeah, okay, sure, that's easy football. But when you have an Alabama team that went 1 of 9 on third down and they go 10 of 20, I said, I got to go back and look at these plays. I got to go back and just look at the third down plays and find out what it was. And, you know, each team had some third and threes and third and fours and third and fives. It's not like Alabama had all third and 15s.
Sure.
You know, but I think of one of the very first series of the game where we had a third and three and we threw the ball across the middle to Michael Williams. And he got, you know, the linebacker got there at the same time as the ball, and he should have caught the ball and held on to the ball. He's a big physical tight end. And he did not. And I really think it came down to we couldn't get off the field. And with all of our three and outs, it just allowed them to be on the field for these 80 something plays. And that's a ridiculous number. I mean, we've been letting teams be on the field for 55, 57 plays, and they were on the field for 30 more plays than that.
Absolutely. And in fact, our previous high in terms of allowing offenses plays was 68, and that was Ole Miss, and you know, that was universally considered, you know, our worst game, so to speak, you know, I guess until Saturday. And so they ran 20 more plays than that. That's pretty impressive. And you compare that to our 53, that's a lot more plays. And so you're exactly right. We had a hard time getting them off the field when we were on defense, and then we had a hard time staying on the field when we were on offense. 1 of 9 is incredibly uncharacteristic of our offense, and 10 of 20, frankly, is highly uncharacteristic of their offense.
It is, but let me say one more thing when I talk about why I don't think they were the better team. Mm-hmm. There's just a couple stats that do kind of bear this out. So even though they had 85 plays to our 52 plays, the average gain per play was 5.1 yards for them, which is high for our defense, but we averaged 6.4 yards a play. So we had more success on fewer plays. They completed an average of 12 yards per completion. We completed 12 yards per completion. We only rushed 25 times for an average of 6.6 yards.
Yep.
They carried the ball 49 times, double ours, for an average of 2.8. So I think that last stat is the most telling. When I talk about did they dominate? No, they didn't dominate. They ran the ball twice as much as we did and had half as much success.
Yeah, we had four guys fill up the tackle sheet. We had four guys in double digits, and you think, wow, that's a productive day. And it was a productive day, especially in the context of the stat that you just put out there. They had
How do we do that real quick? I'm sorry to interrupt you. How do we do that real quick if they dominated us? How do we average 6.6 yards a carry and they get 2.8 if they dominated us, as the commentator said, for 58 minutes?
Well, I think there's stats that you can look at and ask the question that you are, and I think that's certainly fair. I think you have to look at all the stats, and there are stats that suggest that they had the much better day. I think when you distill it down, and I like the angle that you're coming at here with their running, I guess, lack of production. Now, they did have Jonathan Hill rush for over 100 yards, and we did yield more rushing yards to them than we have against any of our opponents. But, you know, with the low average, that's an interesting stat. I'm not sure that I'd seen that one. And I want to underscore another point that you made, is that we got away from where we had success. We had great success running the ball. Lacey had 83 yards, a touchdown, averaged 7.5. Yeldon had 76 yards on the ground at a 6.9 average. Both of them only carry the ball, you know, 10 or 11 times. You know, let's get another 10 or 11, you know, carries in there, as opposed to some of the passes. And we took a couple of strikes downfield. I liked the attempt to Amari Cooper, just a little bit overthrown. It seemed that we tried to force some other passes down the field. I think if we had stuck to our bread and butter running the ball, even just a handful more times, and we're averaging, you know, 5 a carry, I think these other numbers start to melt if we run the ball, you know, 5 or 8 more times that in that ball game.
Well, they do. And when you talk about Jeremy Hill, and granted, I think he's got potential, as does all these other LSU backs. His 115 yards, they don't look so sexy when you realize he rushed 29 times. As you said, Eddie Lacy and TJ Yeldon combined only carried the ball 22 times. So yeah. It's easy to rush for 100 yards when you carry the rock 30 times.
Sure, they were pounding, and you're right. And it's, you know, they were having a low average, but they were able to. They did have success in pounding the ball and converting third downs at a higher clip than they normally do. It's still only 50%, holding the ball in the time of possession, and that's one thing that is important. And it just didn't give them the payoff. Normally, if you run that many more plays, you keep your opponent's defense on the field.
But you don't play
normally.
The number one defense.
You wear them down,
yeah,
and you beat
you don't
them
play
late.
Play the number one defense in the nation. Right. When you're not playing the number one defense in the nation, it works. Sure. You start breaking those 20, 30 yard runs, and because they showed some stat that Jeremy Hill was tearing it up in the fourth quarter, you know, prior to this game, that he was getting like 150 yards in the fourth quarter or some crazy stat, because they're just popping them loose like we've done on other teams in the fourth quarter. But I think your other point, we talked it last week in the pregame about we need to do what works for us, which is the play action, and we need to throw passes across the middle. I don't think we did enough across the middle. I don't think we did enough play action. And the reason we didn't do enough play action is because we didn't run the ball enough. We didn't establish the run. Well, we established a run because obviously we had success. But if you average 6 yards a carry, your play action should have been very successful. And I just don't think we went to it enough.
I don't think we passed off of the run. I don't think we used what we set up in the running game with the play action, and that I think that's a key point. I know
that played a Cooper real quick, right? Which I think probably re-aggravated his ankle, even though Saban said it didn't. He was not himself. That's one of the few times I remember in the game where we did a true play action, and he was wide open, but we just missed him.
Yeah, and it seemed that I only recall us targeting him twice. You know, maybe there was another, but I don't think he had any catches. And so that was kind of a surprise to see him completely fall off the stat sheet after some of the
numbers. He didn't even play the whole second
half.
That's why Marvin Shim was in the game.
Yeah. And so I think that he was definitely banged up. There was definitely some ankle issues there. We only targeted him a couple times, like you said, in the first half. He's a player that we're going to need back. And so, you know, it's interesting to see him fall off the stat sheet, but, you know, that's a result of his injury. I think it's interesting that Norwood stepped up for an injured Cooper, not too dissimilar for how he stepped up in the championship game for Mays. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
It was, man. It's almost like he's got LSU's number. I mean, It was very interesting that, you know, when they were asking him in the press conference and they were just talking about, you know, what did AJ said before that last drive? You know, he just said, basically, we need to move the ball and we've got to put some points on the board, and I had to get open. And then, you know, he's like, in my mind, I had to get open. And then the thing that's so great about this that I want to weave into this for a second is he said, quote, we do this 2-minute drill every Thursday with crowd noise and everything. And then when you switch over to Adrian Hubbard, he said, what was it like to see them drive down the field? We see that every day in practice. Coach Saban has us practice every game plan, every situation that could possibly happen in the game. And then, you know, Chris Fowler's interviewing AJ after the win. And AJ says, we simulate this every week in practice. And Fowler seems surprised. He's like, how could you simulate this? And he's like, because he makes us do it with no timeouts, with one timeout, all these different situations. And you and I have beat this dead horse about Saban for years, but man, how awesome is it that all these players are like, yep, we were ready for this because we prepare for this every week.
Yeah, this is what we do. And you know, almost to McCarron's point, how do you prepare for it? Well, it's a different situation that coach throws out there every time. You know, it's a minute such and such with one timeout or with no timeouts or whatever it is. And so when the clock rolls up, 104, 72 yards down the field, no timeouts. That is, you can't simulate the true pressure of the game being on the line in practice, but you can create circumstances in practice with the noise and the pressure of, you know, sprints or whatever it is that to sort of hype up some pressure so that it's not completely foreign. And I just think it's a testament to the players to, that they take that period of practice serious. And it's a testament to the coaches that they really amp that up and make that a significant part of the practice.
Oh, absolutely. And just like McCarron said, he said, we go against a great defense when we simulate this every week, you know?
Right.
And I mean, it kind of helps to have 18 touchdowns and no interceptions when you practice against the number one pass efficiency defense every week of practice.
It makes you wonder, and it'd be one of those things to, you know, to kind of look at practice a little bit if we had the opportunity. But it makes you wonder if that is reserved for one of the key periods where we truly do go ones against ones.
Well, yeah, they that would be. And they talk about the fact that they do ones against ones on Tuesdays and Wednesdays for a part of both of those practices in full pads.
Right.
And so for all of his, you know, thud tackling and let's be careful about this and that, I love the fact, kind of like Belichick, right? Maybe he learned from Belichick. I like the fact that they go ones and ones and strap on the chin strap and full pads and let's go at it for 5 or 10 minutes a couple times a week.
Right, right.
What did you think about this offensive line? Because I have been very hard on DJ Fluker and on Cyrus, more so DJ Fluker. And I've also sprinkled in Anthony Steen there. And
well, that's across, a liberal sprinkling there with Steen, though, right?
True, true.
Okay.
But I have to say, because we talked about how great their defensive line is and depth-wise, they have more depth than we do. This was the best game of Anthony Steen's career.
Yes.
I noticed several times where he was one-on-one and he had that guy and he was just brute strength moving that guy and directing him where he wanted. And he had a hold of him in the legal holding fashion, which I wish they had when we were playing. And he wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
And I think Steen played a hell of a ball game.
I think he really did. And it came not too many days off the comments that Wormack had where he said that he thought Steen was a better guard than he was. What do you think about that?
I think Wormack's just, you know, if he thinks, does he probably think that the way Saban instills these players to be team approach? Yes. Is it true? No. But Steen played great. And Fluker and Cyrus, okay, you gave up one sack in the whole game against those two defensive ends. Man, I thought both of those guys played great.
Yeah, they played very, very well. There was a lot of pressure on those guys because of the defensive ends for LSU. And so that was sort of the big storyline is how are those matchups going to pay off? How are they going to play out? And I think even the sack, and I had a chance to go back and watch some of the film even just earlier tonight. And even the sack that Cyrus gave up was more of a coverage sack. There was nobody open downfield. Lacey,
it wasn't put, like I immediately got my butt kicked.
Yeah, I didn't just get busted off the line. Lacey chipped a little bit. Cyrus had him at the line, kind of rode him, slipped a little bit, and Sam Montgomery was able to come back to the inside. And it wasn't just getting whipped. You know, it wasn't an Olay block. It was an extended block. If it had been, you know, five step drop, fire the ball out, you know, with not as good a coverage, there wouldn't have been a sack there. And so against a defensive front like that, I can't be too mad at that.
No, and when you talk about Steen for a second, going back to him for a quick second, you know, all these people are talking about how Alabama develops their players. And they talk about how does some of these other programs, which we won't name, get the 4 and 5 stars, but when they get to campus, they don't seem to get better, right? We talked about under Mike Shula. As much as I loved Mike Shula, and I think he's a very good offensive mastermind, players were not getting better in the program. Well, Anthony Steen is a prime example because Anthony Steen got his butt kicked in that Auburn game 2 years ago and did one of these Olays and was just bull rushed. Yep. And he did not get bull rushed at all Saturday night by what is probably the best defensive line front in the country.
Yes. Yes.
So I guess that just speaks of how they develop players, I guess is what I wanted to just point out, is you take a guy like Steen that I've thrown under the bus and run over him five times, and here we are 2 years later, and everybody played good, but, you know, we've talked about Barrett. We've talked about Wormack. But those other three guys, man, they just really – I just wanted to take a few minutes and just overdo this because they played the game of their season in that ball game.
Absolutely. I hats off 100% agree to that. I think it was maybe it was Danielson. Maybe it was, maybe it was the other commentator, indicated or, just kind of made the comment that, game balls should go to the offensive line. So I don't know if that's where you're going to go later in the show. But I kind of nodded at that statement because I agree the offensive line across the board played very, very well. So, yeah, let's lather that on thick because that was quite an impressive performance against, just as you said, probably the best defensive front in the country.
So because of that, and because we average for 6.5 yards a carry on our 25 rushes, I went back and I said, okay, I got to look at this broken down. And we had 57 total plays. We only had 22 plays in the whole second half. We only ran the ball 9 times of those 22. Which means we toted the rock 16 times, twice as much almost in the first half. Mm-hmm. Why do you think we went away from the run as much as we did? Because I think we went too much to the pass in the second half. And when we're dominating as much as we are running the ball with both Lacy and Yeldon, why? I mean, we talked about the great play calling, so we got to be fair on both sides. I think this second half was a poorly play called game.
I don't have anything to disagree with on that. I think we could have called a better game. It wasn't one of our, there were episodes where we did well. We essentially had 2 1-minute drives in this game, and that generated 14 of our points. And then we had a 92-yard drive earlier in the game. With the exception of those three drives, I mean, we gained 227 out of 331 yards on those three drives. That was 22 of our 53 plays on those three drives. You take those drives out, and we were abysmal. And I pulled up the drive chart, and I'm going to put it in the show notes. But I pulled up the drive chart that we've used to illustrate how well we played against LSU in the two games last year. There's a lot of just red dots, a lot of just three and outs, a lot of very short possessions. It's sort of freckled, looks freckled almost, the drive chart does, because we had just so many three and outs. I don't know what to tell you. I have to think that we saw something that we could attack. Eric Reed was banged up. They're all star safety. We know that they didn't have Teran Matthews. And so not that he's a great cover guy, but that just speaks to they went further into their depth coming into the season. But I think by this point in the season, they've got a freshman back there. They've got some younger guys. By this point in the season, they are who they are. And guess what? They're pretty good. But for some reason, we thought there was something that we could attack back there, which to me, frankly, is surprising because we're so depleted at wide receiver.
Sure. With our yards after the catch guys more than anything, right? With DeAndre White and with Cooper and White out, I mean, no offense to these other guys, they're our big yards after the catch guys.
Sure. Now, I got a kick out of, and I'm gonna say this as a joke, but I don't really mean it as a joke. We have talked about Kenny Bell being a one-trick pony. How many times did we run him on slants or curls? That ain't his trick.
No.
We don't run slants and curls with Kenny Bell. We run go patterns.
But see, that's what's so frustrating, though, is you talked in the last week's podcast about, let's expose their linebackers. I think they're going to expose the linebackers like Florida did. Well, we didn't do that. And what's so frustrating is how many times this year have we drug the ball across to the right, and the very next play we've drug it to the left, and we do so good with play action, it works both times. And not only do they have the young linebackers, but then the first safety goes out. And then the second safety goes out for a few plays. And so you got your third and fourth string safeties. And so it's like you got all kind of inexperience in the middle of the field. And we still didn't exploit the middle of the field.
Not really. Now, there's one thing that we did do when Reed went out. We did run a slant with Kenny Bell, and we got some pass interference, and that helped sustain the drive going into half where we scored a touchdown. So that was going after, you know, a younger guy, but we did not do a lot of that.
Well, just to highlight one example, we came out in the third quarter, we're up 14-3. We get the ball because we deferred. Right. Mm-hmm. Here's you're trying to put a nail in the coffin, right? You'd love to go up 21-3 here.
Oh, yeah.
First play from scrimmage, we throw it in the flats to the right to Marvin Shin. AJ's hurried. He throws it kind of low. Marvin Shin can barely handle the ball, and he doesn't gain a yard. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, on the TV that highlights that Cooper is not going to play the second half. That's a problem. We're of the people we still have in the game, right? Cyrus Jones, Kevin Norwood, Kenny Bell. No offense to Marvin Shin, but a guy who hasn't played a whole lot, who's a tall, more possession type of receiver, that's our first play out of the locker room with the ball up 14-3. After we've just run all over them in the first half, that's truly our first play call?
I don't have an answer for that. I wasn't surprised that he's on the field because we need him on the field, but I'm surprised that we would try to go to him
behind the line thing, right? That's not his play. That's a make somebody miss thing, right?
Right.
That's just not his deal. Well, there's one other thing that I do want to point out. As frustrating as our possessions were in the second half, I do think from a momentum standpoint that when LSU went for the fake, when they faked the kickoff and we recovered and Yeldon came in and rushed for four times in a row and we get the ball down to the 10-yard line and we've got third and three, when AJ didn't put that ball in his basket, which was not Yeldon's fault, when you go back and look at the replay, we had everybody blocked.
Yep.
He would have run in the end zone for 10 yards, touchdown, all the momentum in the world. We are now up 21-10 at the end of the third quarter. I think it's a totally different ball game if that happens.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. It's a different ball game. That was a critical turnover. And that's a turnover that very well could have cost us the game. If we go up there, I think that puts a different spin on the ball game just altogether. I do think, you know, sort of.
And that can go the other way, which is you might be going here. That can go the other way. I know there were some plays of theirs that changed things too, but that was just a big momentum play.
Yeah, and the fact that we were able to overcome it, I know that, you know, a freshman, and so was it the quarterback's fault? Was the running back's fault? You looked at it, you know, a little bit more. It looked like maybe it was a handoff, but the running back's still there, still has some culpability. The fact that we went back to him late in the game to essentially win the game, I thought that showed a lot of resilience on his part, but then a lot of trust in the way of the quarterback and the coaching staff.
That was a great call. Of all the calls that frustrated me, when LSU came out there with a minute left and played off them, you and I talked about this. I don't understand that.
Right.
You're 36-1 at home at night under Les Miles. You're riding a 22-game winning streak. You know the stat that they tell us at home that AJ's never trailed in the fourth quarter as a starting quarterback. And you've got this ferocious defensive line, and you don't just go jailhouse after him. I'm sorry. If they come after him with six or seven guys for a couple plays, we don't win that ball game, in my opinion. But instead, they play prevent. How do you do that? How do you play prevent in that situation when you've got us on the ropes?
Well, yeah, it was another out-of-character play for them. They had been aggressive most of the night. You know, they got burned playing off of us dedicating the coverage at half. That's how McCarron was able to run for that touchdown. They had 7-8 guys back in coverage. And so he had everything wide open. And they did rush. I can't remember if it was a safety or a corner. They did rush somewhere. They rushed one person, which really is actually what freed Yeldon. And so McCarron was able to get the ball just over him. And then that gave Yeldon sort of some a nice buffer to start his assault. But they didn't come after him in the way that you would expect an LSU defense, the way you would expect the number one defensive line in the country to come after a quarterback in that situation. So, yeah, they were a little bit out of character.
Yeah, just, we got you at our house. We got you at night. We got you on the ropes. We got our fans. We kind of got you where we want you kind of deal. But, yeah, I think after Yeldon fumbled that ball, going back to that for a second, we got him pinned at the 10. Mettenberger completes a pass to your 270-pound fullback, and he runs for 42 yards.
Yes.
I mean, that I should have said that a minute ago. That's the whole momentum swinger, right? It wasn't a point exchange right away, but it goes from it could have been 21-10 to now they got the momentum and they go up 17-14,
yep.
And it just changed things completely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's just it's a 10-point, shift in momentum. So that's very, very significant.
Hey, what else jumped out at you on offense, if anything?
I want to call out Norwood. He had 5 catches on the game for 62 yards. And if you go back and look at when he got those catches, everyone knows that he got 3 catches on the last drive. And so 3 of his 5 catches, 44 of his 62 yards came on that last drive. So each 3 of those were first downs. Do you know when his other 2 catches came?
Third downs.
His other 2 catches came on the drive at the end of the half. He had 2 catches, 1 for a first down, and then 1 going out of bounds. He had an 8-yard reception. It was the play before McCarron's run. So his 5 possessions, all 62 of his yards, came on the drive at half and the drive to end the game.
That was very significant. His that could not have come at a better time. That's for sure.
No, there was, by definition, there's no better time. there's no other time to do it than that, right?
No, absolutely not. Hey, as we I guess let's just quickly. I quickly want to highlight Chris John Jones for a second.
Yes.
There was a key play on that same drive where he caught the ball in the right flats because he's the kind of guy you should throw that pass to,
yes.
Not Marvin Shinn.
Yes.
He, where I'm going to go with this. He redirected himself all the way to the left side, and Amari Cooper, who was hobbling on one leg, made the key block to spring him another 10 or 15 yards. But his couple contributions were key in this game also.
Yes. He was a critical player. He's a guy that I want to see step up. He's a guy that I would have expected to have stepped up. And again, maybe it was just coach's decision, but I would expect him to get the catches rather than Sylvie.
You would think with Cooper not playing in the second half that Chris John Jones would have elevated his game. And to be fair, LSU did have the second ranked pass efficiency defense behind us. It's very possible that he just couldn't get open as much against their corners.
Oh, that's absolutely fair. I think that, and I know sometimes you're reticent to do this, and I think you'll be more willing to do this, with this opponent. I think they forced us into things, and they forced some of our, we could look at it and say bad play calling, bad execution. There is some of that, but LSU, more than some of our other opponents, forced that out of us.
I know where you're going with that, but I go back to the stat of simply we ran 25 times for 6.5 yards a carry. You rushed 50 times for 2.8 yards a carry. I'm sorry. I will give you that in years past, where you and I have witnessed an LSU defensive line that has dominated an Alabama line in years prior to Saban.
I can't get you to bite on this, can I?
I cannot, because we physically dominated them with the running game. And to your point earlier, if we would have just ran a little bit more, we would have loosened up the play action pass more. We would have not had the ball just 20 minutes in the ball game. They would not have had the ball 85 plays. It could have changed the whole game.
All right. I'm going to try one more time. I'm going to give you a minute. Let's hit on defense. What stood out to you on defense?
You know, defense, it's a mixed bag.
Yes.
Because when you look at the stat sheet and you see we had 100-something assisted tackles, and you're like, oh, man, our guys must have just been gang tackling and flying to the ball. Well, part of that's because they had 85 plays.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
I mean, I think like our offense, okay, when our offense needed to step up after a couple three and outs, they did. When our defense needed to step up, they did. So I guess I want to start by saying he preaches adversity. Our defense stepped up when the game was on the line. And when they had to, they did. So let's start with the good stuff. I mean, when they sat there on that third and one and that fourth and one at the 25, 30-yard line with LSU up by 3 points, that was a turning point. That was, you know, if we're going to start with the good stuff, that was huge.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was, you know, that certainly was a turning point. If you're going good, I'm going to go, you know, maybe less good is, you know, we played a lot of base defense. You know, you and I talked Saturday night after the game, and you know, at the time you were giving props to the LSU play calling, you know, scheming to keep us in base, to keep Mosley on the sidelines. And I just go back to something I've said for, you know, coming up on 2 years now. There's something wrong with a defensive scheme that's designed to keep your best linebacker on the bench.
I agree with you, and I've thought more about this since you said that Saturday night, and I think the compromise here can be situational. So what I don't get is third and two and third and one and third and three, okay, keep Nico in the game. But when it's third and five and six and seven and eight, okay, or better yet, the tweener, right? When it's the third and five and six, right? Why can't you have CJ on the field?
Sure.
And that's where I think we can agree to disagree with the coaches, because who are we? We're just fans. But it's almost like they've got this little chart that says if it's third and short or third and middle, it's got to be Nico. I don't agree with that. They're like, it can only be third and long for it to be CJ.
I think it's less of down and distance, and it's more of personnel groupings. Oh, they've got this personnel grouping on the field, so we attack that with, you know, like you said, they ran the ball so many times, you know,
yeah,
low average, but they were able to keep one of our best defenders on the bench doing that, which I think allowed them to sustain the ability to do that. And so it's almost a personnel grouping that says, oh, well, you know, Mosley, you don't get to play because they've got this personnel grouping. What they need to do is splice that a little differently and say, hey, we can, even with this personnel grouping, we can rotate. And if it is that short, even with this personnel grouping, if it's short yards, yeah, let's go with more of our true middle linebacker, Nico, you're in there. And if it's, you know, a shade over that, then we rotate them. We get Mosley in there and we do something different, even with this base personnel, because we have the ability to put Mosley in there and to be so much more versatile.
Well, I think this is an example, right? We talk about him having a situation for everything and take the air out of the ball, running back and all the stuff we've talked about, right? This might be the one situation where it bites him in the butt. Because to your point, it's like, okay, we got this personnel. This is who we're going to bring in, right? And going back to the stat sheet, if they rush the ball 49 times and they average 2.8 yards, while that doesn't seem great compared to our 6 yards, right? To your point, if you get 2.8 yards three different times, you've almost gotten a first down.
Sure.
And so to your point, you can. There's 49 plays that CJ was on the bench.
Sure, absolutely.
That's a lot of plays for him to be on the bench.
And what's, I want to say frustrating, because I don't know if that's quite the right word.
No, that is the quite word. He's one of our best players.
No, I understand that. That is frustrating. But the performance of Nico is, you know, he put up good numbers, but that's a function of the number of plays that he was on the field. He did not have the, you know, if you just looked at the stat line, you'd think, well, he had the best game of his career. He did not have the best game of his career. He was out of position a number of times. He gave up, I thought, big plays a couple of times. He filled the gap and made some great tackles and made some really good plays a couple of times, too. He did what he does. He just had the opportunity to do more of it because he was on the field more. So he made some good plays and some less good plays. He just got to do more of that.
Well, and I think this speaks to what you're saying, right? Because CJ is, they both bring different things to the game. And like you said, Nico was the one that stopped that third and one. And we talked about this Saturday night. Nico filled the hole. Nico took the block of the 270-pound Copeland, and he tackled Spencer Ware. So to be fair, he made that play.
Sure.
But when you talk about big plays, right, and the big plays of the interceptions and the sacks and the tackles for loss, I mean, now that you've mentioned this, just to touch on this for a quick second, okay, this right here might speak to what you're saying. On the stat sheet, Nico Johnson, two solos, 10 assists, a half a tackle for loss.
Mm-hmm.
C.J. Mosley, three solos, one assist, a half a tackle for loss. You and I on the show, we call it out fair. We dish it out both ways, good and bad.
Sure.
So let's call that what we just said. Okay, an assist is great, but a solo is better, right? Yes. Because you're the first one of the ball, and absolutely, you didn't need help. You didn't need help. So with all due respect to Nico, you had two solos. C.J. had three. And I'd love to know how many plays he played versus you. And we're not trying to put the two together here. We're just trying to illustrate to the listeners that CJ had as many impactful plays in the game, and he played a lot less plays.
Yeah, I like both of them. I just think
I wish they could. What did you say before, right? In years past, I wish they could both be on the field together.
Sure. And we've seen some of that this year.
Very little, though. It's always Trey and Nico. Or it's CJ and a safety. Don't we see more Nico and Mosley together?
No, I understand. We don't see a lot of it. We have seen it. And whereas in years past, we have not seen it. But still, it's very limited. It's not nearly as much as I would like. But it's just a bugaboo with me is, you know, we've got our best linebacker and not just our best linebacker, one of our better defenders.
Just on
the bench. And so, you know, I find that frustrating, and that's not so much negative against Nico. It's just, I think we have a more talented skill set that we're not able to leverage.
Oh, and that's why I wanted to call out the play he made on that third and one, because, you know, he needed to be in the game in that situation,
yep,
which is kind of what you were saying earlier, because he was the right person to make that play. Hey, I want to quickly talk about my bugaboo, and that is the play of the safeties. Outside of Robert Lester, not only did they scheme to keep C.J. Mosley on the bench, but they tried to make our safeties who have to play nickel because we don't have a third cornerback and put them in uncomfortable situations. And the combination of Ha-Ha and Vinny and Nick Perry were not up to the task of being – as we said Saturday night, we're playing a nickel with a safety, and in years past, we've played a nickel with a cornerback.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. They each have a skill set. They each bring something valuable to the table. It's not always what we need when we need it. One of the things that we talked about Saturday night, you know, just about this, the play of the safety, and the fact that we're playing a lot of. And I don't know if this is a term that we have sort of made up and patented, or, you know, if it's, you know, this is what coaches would label it as well. But we play a lot of safety nickel. And so, you know, four DBs will bring in the fifth DB and it's a safety. So we're playing three safeties traditionally. And I say traditionally, you know, just think back to last year, we would play a lot of corner nickel.
Yeah.
And so last year, what we have this year is Ha-Ha, Sinceri, and Perry playing that nickel safety, and they're all trying to replace a Daquan Menzie. Now,
yes.
Daquan Menzie has the aggressiveness and the ball awareness that a Sinceri has, the ability to cover and just the raw athleticism of a
I don't know if HaHa brings all of that.
But I don't think HaHa does, but HaHa's the athletic one, right?
Sure.
And so Menzi brings that. He brings the physicality of a Sinceri, and he brings, I don't know, just the experience in the system and the knowledge of the system of a Perry, and you know, maybe that's generous. But my point is, he sort of embodies the characteristics that each of those three embody separately. And so when we have him on the field last year, we just didn't have the lapses, and we didn't have sort of the misplays that we had Saturday night.
Well, let's got off the field on 3rd and 5 and 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 7 because the slant receiver wasn't able to catch the ball.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
that's it in a nutshell.
You're right, and so I think I made this point when we talked, you know, Saturday night. Is if you were to poll Bama fans, you know, just the average fan, and, you know, and I'm not mad at Bama fans, you know, I love them. But if you were to poll the average fan and say, who from last year's team would you most want to have had tonight? You get a lot of Upshaws. You might get a Dre Kirkpatrick. I don't know. But you'd get a lot of Hightowers and a lot of Upshaws. And I tell you what, I wonder if Menzi's not the one we really would have wanted.
Menzi is the one we would have wanted. And, you know, for 4 years now, Nick Saban has, well, for parts of 4 years, he's benefited from the three cornerbacks. And so in 2009, once again, coaching up a player, bringing a player along, Marquise Johnson played very well in 2009.
Sure.
With Kareem Jackson and Javi. What did Marquise do? He came in the nickel. 2010, what happens? Daquan Menzi has his Achilles injury. He's gone for the year. Garcia has the game of his life in the South Carolina game. LSU picks us apart. Why? We don't have the third corner. Menzi comes back last year. Teams can't stay on the field against us. And so I think of Menzi and Marquise Johnson as those third cornerbacks. And another name that we should throw out here real quick is Travell Dixon.
Sure.
Because you and I talked about this. Why did Nick Saban go out there and recruit Ballou and Dixon, two JUCO corners, just like he did Daquan Menzi 2 years ago? Because he knew that he couldn't have enough corners to throw them all out there to get his third cornerback. He knows to make his suffocating defense really work, he needs that third cornerback.
Yeah. And so, you know, and so John Fulton's a guy that we could say, well, I guess we maybe should be a little bit frustrated because he's not developed to fill that role. I thought that he would. And Travell Dixon's a guy that I have to look at it and wonder, gosh, does he just lack some maturity? Because did he get halfway through fall camp and say, well, this is as good as I'm going to be, and it's not good enough, so I need to go somewhere else, without the realization that, you know what, by week three, I'm going to be better than week one. And by week five, I'm going to be better than week three. By the time I get to week eight, I'm going to be a pretty darn good player in this system. And so you have to wonder, if he were available, what sort of role or capacity would he have played? And that's unknowable.
Sure.
But hell, it's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. And he should have been able to see enough examples of how many players Saban puts on the field to know, with all these situations that we're sitting here talking about, that of all places you can go play, right? Alabama plays a lot more than 22 guys.
Absolutely. I would think, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, anything else on defense that jumps out at you?
Not so much defense, but I'm going to come at you one more time. Let me ask you this question, and it's a different question. It's similar, but it is a different question.
Okay.
Do you think that Alabama won the game with their play on the field, or that LSU lost the game with some of their coaching decisions?
Oh, I definitely think that LSU lost the game with their coaching decisions.
Okay.
I mean, we have not touched on this yet. We probably should have talked about it at the beginning. The Mad Hatter needs to just keep his damn hat on his head. I thought it was funny that Tracy Wolfson asked him, you know, we get to see this kind of stuff that we don't when we're playing home games. But I loved it. It's so hilarious that she asked him in the pregame, you know, we hadn't even seen any tricks out of that Mad Hatter, or, you know, are we going to see some tonight? Well, man, if he truly has not pulled any out all year, I guess he saved them all up for Alabama. But, buddy, I'm glad he did, because they were all horrible decisions.
And I like sort of the self-deprecating, you know, going in the half. He said, well, I should have kept some of these under the hat. I thought that was a funny line. But yeah, the fake field goal when we're in
fourth and 12, are you kidding me?
Well, it's on fourth and 12, and we're in kick safe. I mean, you can tell that we have guys sort of umbrella, it's almost linebacker positions. And that was one of the good plays that Nico made, because he was on the line of scrimmage in a 3-point stance, but he crawled out and actually made the play. And so you have to wonder on that one, they should have kicked the field goal. And then they attempted a 54-yard kick, which they missed. Subsequently, we're able to drive that down for a touchdown. But this is a critical point that we made in the game last year. You have a 54-yard field goal. His previous long was 44 yards. So you're well out of his comfort zone. We're going to get the ball at the spot of the kick. They're better off just punting that ball with their all-star, their all-world punter who can pin us inside the 5-yard line with a suicide corner kick. They would have been much better off to do that. And that was one of the mistakes that we made three times last year, as we kept kicking those long kicks and giving them spectacular field position.
Well, and that's what's so hilarious to me, that they did what we did, right? And on that particular missed field goal, if your longest has been 44 or 45 yards and your coach sends you out there for 54, you're going to be amped up. You're going to run to the ball quicker than you should have. What did he do? He slipped. Why did his plant foot slip? Because he was overhyped up for a ball that he's never hit in his career.
Sure, sure. He was overextending to try to do that. And you have to wonder a little bit. I think they were in our heads a little bit on play calling. We've talked about that. We got away from the run against their front and stuff like that. I wonder if this wasn't a situation where we were in their heads a little bit. And so they attempt, you know, and Les Miles makes the point, well, you know, if we make this fake field goal, you guys need to remember then that puts us in position to score a touchdown. Well, of course it does. That's a dumb comment. But what that points to is getting three. We can't beat them with threes. We can't beat them with field goals. We have to beat them with touchdowns. And so they get desperate there and try to force something for a touchdown. It doesn't work. So at 54 yards, where they have this punter where they should take advantage of that and play to their strengths, they again go outside of their strength and try to kick this field goal because, shit, we didn't get the points last time. We've got to get points this time. It's just almost chasing bad money in Vegas, right? We made a bad decision before, so now we've got to make another bad decision to try to make up for that.
Oh, sure. And it just makes you wonder, right? Because coming into this game with an unproven quarterback, one of your best weapons is your punter. And to only let him, I mean, one of his punts went for 64 yards in this ball game. And so to your point, with 3 minutes left in the first half, you pin us in deep, a fumble or something occurs, now you got a short field. Now you might can get some points on the board before halftime.
Absolutely. Now, what about their onside kick?
Dumb call. I agree with Gary Danielson. I mean, he kind of called on what you said on the field goal. He said they should have kicked the one that they faked, and they should have, you know, not kicked the one that they tried to kick. Well, you know, on the onside kick, you know, I guess it was Mark May I was listening to, and he was like, you got all the momentum. You got them where you want them here. You just scored. Everything's on your side. You got a great defense. Make them go the length of the field. It was a dumb call. I mean, yes, the ball bounced in a weird way that it wouldn't do in lots of different attempts. But with the defense they have, you should have kicked the ball deep.
Yeah, I probably have changed my tune a little bit on this since we talked Saturday night. Kind of in the moment, I thought it was the least offensive of, I think all three of these were maybe bad calls. And I think this, other people have said this is, they think, the most egregious. This is, I think, the least egregious.
I agree with that. Of all the, let me just give them a spark and let me try to do something uncharacteristic, it had the more likelihood of success than the other ones.
It did. And it nearly so almost worked perfectly for them. The ball has to travel 10 yards and they've got this sort of wall that they're setting up for the kicker, and the kicker literally kicks the ball and then runs, you know, kind of right behind it until it goes 10 yards and then he grabs it. The design of it is almost impervious when the receiving team does not expect it. The only thing that can go wrong and did go wrong is that it's an oblong ball, and sometimes it just bounces funny. And when that ball went eight and a half yards, instead of tumbling end over end and continuing to go forward, it hit on its nose and bounced back into the chest of the kicker as he was at about the nine and a half yards. I'm sorry, it has to go 10. And so it was the crazy bounce of the ball that reminded me of the fumble that Mark Ingram had a couple years ago. It danced along the sidelines that you couldn't recreate that in, you know, 100 attempts. It was a fluky kind of crazy thing that worked out against them. But, you know, that's why you have to be careful when you do those types of plays. If they had kicked it away and relied on their defense and pinned us back, all of that starts to sound really good in light of giving us the ball there at the 50.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I just think that at the time he did that, you know, and to your point, right, it could have really bit him in the ass had we not had the fumble with Yeldon. Hey, while we're on the defense side, before we go to special teams, I do want to talk about Mettenberger real quick, because
sure,
we talked about Garcia and the game he had at South Carolina. We let him stay comfortable. Not only was I frustrated with the play of our safeties in space, but I was frustrated at how we went at Mettenberger. I remember when we had the true freshman for Missouri coming in to play against Alabama. One of the first plays of scrimmage, C.J. Mosley comes through the gap and just nails him for a sack. Well, going back and looking at the stats, you know, the stats kind of bear out what we did as far as going after the quarterback, and we just really did not get after him. Yes, we tried some delay blitz. We tried to disguise some things, and we tried to go at the quarterback late. But I just really think with two freshmen on the right side of the ball that we should have just tried to go up the gut a little bit and just do some jailhouse blitzes and just try to have some quarterback hurries, just to, even if we don't get to him in time, just knock him down a little bit early in the game. I just think we let him get too comfortable. And as the game went on, that big arm just started letting the ball fly.
Yeah, I agree. I think early in the game, maybe even just the second play of the game, we tried to get after him like that. But then that was really the only time that I saw us really, you know, send a bunch of people. Other than that, it was, you know, we're going to send a corner or we're going to send a linebacker. Or we just really just send in one person from different angles. And it was always a longer way to go to get there. We didn't just send a bunch of stunts right up the middle to kind of get right in his grill. And that really, to your point, gave him a lot of time to set his feet and prepare. He had 68% percent completion percentage. He was about 47% in conference going into Saturday. And so he was 20 points above his in-conference, completion percentage, which is an incredible uptick in performance. He had 298 yards just right there at the 300, which is sort of an impressive benchmark, especially in college. A touchdown, you know, no interceptions, which was amazing. I don't know. I probably would have set the over under it, you know, 1.5 or 2.
Yeah, I think he thought we were going to pick off a couple. Sure.
I expected us to.
You had even talked in the pregame about we're going to lay off him a little bit, right? And we're going to let him kind of unleash some balls. And, I mean, he just fit it where he needed to. And going back to that quarterback hurries, which is just so frustrating, we talked at the Mississippi State game about this was the best quarterback or one of the better quarterbacks we had played. Him and Tyler Bray, right, were the best quarterbacks we had played so far due to injuries and stuff. Well, maybe it speaks to how good the LSU line is, which is why I think we should have sent 5 or 6 guys. But against Mississippi State, we had 10 quarterback hurries. We only had one sack, but we had 10 quarterback hurries.
Right.
In this LSU game, we had the donut. We got 3 sacks. That's great. but no quarterback hurries.
We did not affect the quarterback. You know, using Saban speak, right? Sack is nice, but you want to affect the quarterback. And hurries and rushes and pressures, which lead to picks, you know, sometimes are better than they have an additive effect that's sometimes better than, you know, just a sack.
I think your comment real quick of setting his feet is huge.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to move around in the pocket. Hardly ever.
No.
And you're a statue and you're not a running quarterback and we're going to let you sit back there and take your big arm and pick us apart because we're playing zone, that's a recipe for disaster.
Right. And I'll say this too, out of his 24 completions, you know, 35 attempts, he had a number of drops that were not his fault. He had a number of receivers that just dropped the ball.
So great. He could have completed 30 passes.
Sure. He could have, you know, 3-4 more passes very easily. He could have been into the mid-70s very, very easily. And not only then are those, you know, stats on his stat line, but that's moving the ball down the field.
Sure. Hey, anything else on defense before we jump to special teams?
Nah, curious to special teams.
Man, I just have to start, you know, just kind of quickly covering special teams for a minute. I think Cody Mandel, just the consistency with which he played with, Saban had him as one of the players of the week, and he called him out. He kind of went toe-to-toe with Brad Wing, and I think he was up for the challenge. You know, he had a long of 56. He had a respectable 45-yard average, which is higher than his season average. He had two inside the 20 and one touchback. I think he kind of went mano a mano with Brad Wing.
He did, and it was impressive. The number on his stat line that bugs me the most is the one that he has least impact on, 7 punts. Damn.
Yes, and that goes back to the offensive frustration.
Sure.
But
that's not his fault, but it is. Sure.
No. But on a night when you had to punt more than you've punted all year, okay, and to your point, he punted 5 times twice this year, but for the most part, he's been averaging 2 or 3 a game. So to have to come out there 7 times and still put up a 45-yard average, man, that was awesome.
Sure. He probably had to ice after that, huh?
Anything else on special teams?
I thought our
kickoff coverage was better.
I thought it was better. I thought we put the ball in the end zone a couple times. I thought that was good. I've got two additional things. What'd you think of Cyrus Jones, the fumble that he had?
You know, not to give credit to Gary Danielson again, but I will because I think he's also a great commentator. I think he was right. I think Cyrus, as a freshman, made a good judgment there in going after the ball. I think he was trying to save his, you know, Gary, I'm not stealing your stuff. I called you out here. He was trying to save 20 yards of field position. He said it on the TV that night. He was trying to make the play because he knew the ball was going to sit there and roll 20, 25 yards. He just didn't grab the ball. I think it was I actually think that he was not at fault. I did not get to go back and slow-mo that play to find out who was the gunner that released the LSU guy. Because the LSU linebacker, the starting linebacker, Kevin Minter, who was all by himself and didn't even get blocked at the line of scrimmage,
mm-hmm.
He's the reason Cyrus fumbled that ball.
Sure.
Because he was on Cyrus, and there was nobody there to help Cyrus.
Yep. No, I agree, and I think Danielson said it right. That was an athletic error, not a mental error. And then you can layer upon that, you know, the LSU defender that was there perhaps should not have been there had someone blocked him. So,
or just a little more space, right? Right.
Sure.
If you just hold him up at the line of scrimmage instead of being 5 yards away, he's 10 yards away. So now little Cyrus hears this 245-pound linebacker not quite so close. Maybe he doesn't bobble the ball.
Sure.
Anything else on special teams?
One thing that I noticed, and I was actually watching for it, I saw Yeldon on one coverage team. And I looked for him on special teams, and I only spotted him once. I don't know if you saw him. I found myself a little bit rooting for him to be in there.
Oh, really?
He's the better of the guys against this opponent. And I was a little bit surprised at myself. You know, I'm looking for him. I've been looking for him, hoping, you know, knowing that I'd be mad if I found him. And I found myself just sort of organically looking for him, hoping that I'd find him because he's the better guy.
Interesting. No, I did not look for him on the going back and doing the replay. So I didn't see what teams he was on.
Who you got for mini game balls?
You know, offense, not to spend much time with this, offensive line. I mean, okay. it was the most complete game they've played all season against their toughest opponent.
Yep. And, you know, for reasons that we've already talked about, I think that's spot on. For reasons that we've already talked about, I almost held out the stat breakout for the mini game ball, but Norwood, his five catches on those two last minute drives, one at the half, one at the end of the game. I kind of got chills when I realized, holy cow, that's where he got all of his production.
Sure.
He was emerging for the injured Cooper, if you will. And sure. Then last, you know, January, he was emerging for the injured Mays. I almost got chills when I realized what he was doing and when he was doing it.
Against who he was doing it. Sure.
Against who he was doing it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about defense?
Well, defense, man, I'm just going to have to give it to DJ Pettway. You know, he only has one assist on the stat sheet. We've talked about him being in on that goal line short yardage defense. He made a bad decision a few weeks ago on the goal line, and I think he kind of didn't keep his gap assignment. But on this particular situation, he basically made his offensive tackle miss. He made the big-ass fullback miss, and he's the reason they didn't get the fourth and one. And so if you're going to have one tackle on the sheet, that was probably the most important tackle of the whole night on the defensive side of the ball.
Nope, that's a good one. That's a good pick. I don't know if I have not enough thought or just the right amount of thought in my mini game ball for defense, but when we scored that touchdown at the end of the game, there was still time on the clock. They still had an opportunity to do something with the ball, and the way Mettenberger had been playing and just the way things, sort of the magic and the voodoo in this stadium there, you just never know what's going to happen. And so I'm giving my mini game ball to Damian Square, who recorded the sack that ended the game.
That's a good one. that there's nothing wrong with that, man. We
can't throw touchdowns on your ass.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a nice way to end the ball game. Hey, absolutely. What do you think about this next opponent? It's so nice of us to face a 7-1. Well, it's kind of nice that we had to play a 7. You know, people talk about our schedule, right? I love people talking about our schedule right now as the number one team. But, oh, yeah, we played a 7-0 Mississippi State. We just played a 7-1 LSU, 36-1 at home at night. And now we get to play a 7-2 Texas A&M. Sounds like our schedule's okay to me.
Yeah, it definitely sounds good. And this A&M team, you know, they're sneaky good. The two losses that they have are to Florida and to LSU, which
okay.
are two pretty good teams last I checked. So they're not someone to be taken lightly. They are a prolific offense. They put points up in bunches. They have a quarterback.
And yards, coach. Right? Yards, too. I mean, they're putting up 600 yards a game almost. That's crazy.
They do the types of things that we struggle with. They run a lot of plays. They have a mobile running quarterback, and they put a lot of points on the board. I think our defense can slow them down, but I think they're good, and I think they put up some points. I think we have a couple of things in our favor. This is their third straight road game. They played at Auburn, at Mississippi State, and so now at Tuscaloosa. So that kind of wears on you. They've played five out of their last seven games have been road games. So eventually you think that kind of wears on you. But we're coming out of a very physical, very emotional LSU game. And so I wonder if those 2 points don't just neutralize themselves.
Well, I'm going to put a good spin on this. We are facing the Oregon of the SEC.
Yes.
So we are going to get a good chance to see how we handle this. Because, I mean, Oregon's putting up 55 points, which is gaudy, as the number one in the country. And they're putting up 45. I mean, like you said, I mean, we can't talk about these stats enough. They're averaging, they're number four in the country on scoring offense, and they're number fifth in the country on total offense. we have not faced an offense like this all year. Well, what do you think about this freshman Johnny Manziel?
Well, I am already tired of the Johnny football. And so if he's going to hang around for three more years, I'm going to just gouge my eye out, because I'm already kind of annoyed at his nickname. I like what Reese Davis did. I liked his he started calling him Scooby-Doo, because apparently Johnny Football went as Scooby-Doo to a Halloween party. And I don't know if you've seen any pictures from that party, but he was doing work.
No, I have not. I have not. But I do think that this will be a very tough opponent. I think it will be. Will it be our toughest opponent of the year? No. Will it be our second toughest of the opponent of the year? Yes. What kind of score are you thinking for this ball game?
Well, I'm going to post a picture in the show notes demonstrating Johnny Manziel doing work. I'm going to say that they have us almost in a trap game type situation. So we need to be P's and Q's on this effort, or we can get, you know, behind and in trouble in a hurry. This is an offense that can put up points. I think that they will play a scheme that has us playing Mosley on the field a lot more. Not that he's going to, you know, save the day necessarily, but I think they're going to chunk it around a little bit. I think we're going to get some picks. I think we're going to show him some things that he has not seen before. This is also the defense that gave up 117 points to Louisiana Tech. So I think that from that standpoint, we can be physical with them. I have heard rumor from someone who's an A&M fan that they don't go deep in terms of their depth chart on defense. He said only like 14 or 15 people. I think it has to be more than that. But I think that we can. I think we will run the ball. I think we will pound the ball. Try to maintain the time of possession. I think we're going to defend him similar to how we defended Robinson. We're going to set the edge. And so we may see, Adrian Hubbard, you know, setting the edge and then just staying on the edge, not getting after the quarterback. I know I'm going a little long here, but I'm looking at a 31, maybe 17 type ball game.
Okay. Well, they come in, like I said, putting up to 45 points, but they are giving up 21 points a game. I think we're going to try some of what LSU did to us, right? I mean, I'd love to run the ball 49 times and yep. have 85 plays, because I do think we have to keep them off the field because of how well they score. I think they're going to put up some points. I think they're going to be the first team this year to put up 20 on us. I think we're looking at, because it's a trap game situation, I think we're looking at like a 34-24 type of ball game.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a, once again, frustrating game for into the third and fourth quarter.
All right. I hate to say, you're probably closer to right than I am. I want to get this game over with early, but I think they're a high-powered offense, and so I don't know that we do, but I think you make a very good point. They're the SEC's version of Oregon. And so one thing that at the end of this game, if we come out successful and if we do anticipate maybe facing Oregon in Miami, we'll have some experience against something like that. And so, but
we're going to know whether we can. Yeah. We're going to know whether we can play against this scheme or not.
Yep. Yeah, we may. Yes. Yes, we will. So hopefully that turns out the right way. Hey, just real quick, I just want to do a mailbag shout out to Jordan from Houston, Texas. Big Bama fan there. Too long of an email to read, but we appreciate him sending out. He had a couple questions for us. I think that you handled one of his questions relative to Nick Perry. And he wanted to give a shout out to C.J. Mosley, and he actually offered a mini game ball to Mosley. So I thought that was impressive. I think he's in agreement with us on why is Mosley not playing. So we gotcha. Appreciate Jordan listening and reaching out to us.
Perfect. Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Hey, everyone, sign up for our newsletter for a chance to win a free T-shirt. We've got some cool resources that we're going to be dropping, one on this Friday. And some others that we'll be posting on the site. They're not audio products. So if you're subscribing only through iTunes, then you will not get these things. They'll be on the website, but you won't have them delivered. If you sign up for our newsletter, you'll have a chance to win a free t-shirt, and you'll get some of these free cool features that that we're sending out, some resources that we're sending out on the site. You can get them delivered in your email if you sign up for the newsletter. Thanks for listening, and roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.